Well, I'm very aware that statistics need to be treated with a certain amount of caution, and that they, along with other forms of information that we receive from time to time, need to be interpreted. But one recent study filled me with, well, I've got to be honest, with a deep sense of dread and concern, really, and has reacted as a spur to my own personal evangelistic efforts. According to a recent study, when Elvis Presley was alive, there were 34 Elvis impersonators. Now there are 8,029. The report calculates that at the current rate, one out of every five people on Earth will be an Elvis impersonator by the year 2037. So we've got to do something quick, because I'm not a big Elvis Frenzy fan. I'm even less of Elvis Presley impersonators. But you have been warned. One out of five if we carry on at this rate. Well, anyway, there's a chapter in one of David Watson's books, which is Anyone There? It's called. A classic, I think. And I've been rereading it recently, and there's a chapter there entitled How Can I Find God? And it's a question that many people are asking today. It may be not the way they're expressing that question, but it's not in those exact words, but they are looking for him. It's my increasing experience personally, and I read it in all kinds of places. For example, I did a follow-up visit recently at a funeral, a month or so back, about a man who committed suicide, leaving behind a wife and family. And let me just say, the rate of suicide seems to be climbing quite drastically. It's amazing how many people between 24 and 44, around that age group, seem to be committing suicide. Anyway, I went to see this woman. The wife wasn't at home, but I spoke to the daughters there and said, yeah, come back. Mum's not here in the moment, but come back. She'd love to speak with you, which is great. But I just got talking on the doorstep, and it emerges that this lady had actually, meantime, had been to see a spiritualist to see if she could make some contact with her husband to see if he was all right. And although it is a practice that is expressly forbidden in the scriptures and warned against in no uncertain manner, I think it expresses a need for answers to one of life's big questions, which is there a life after death? In other words, it's a search for God. I know someone who years ago, when she was quite young, made the huge decision to have an abortion because a relationship she was part of had just fallen apart, and she felt she could not bring the child into the world. But ever since then, she has struggled with a deep sense of guilt and is in desperate need of forgiveness. Who will forgive her? The baby can't, and she certainly can't. So again, I think it's a search, isn't it, for God. And even from those who outrightly reject God and deny his existence, there is still, if you look carefully and listen carefully to them, if you forget the rhetoric and the hype and the kind of the vitriol very often of the language, behind it all, I think, is a desperate search for God. Last year, my son dragged me to Pontydewy to see Billy Bragg in concert. And I'm quite interested in some of the things Mr. Bragg has to say. But what he didn't tell me, that before Billy Bragg came on, there was be another act. And this act was a recitation of poetry by a man called Patrick Jones. You may have heard of him mentioned in the context of a furore there was in the Welsh Assembly, where an outright atheist was to read poetry that viciously attacked the Christian faith. And there was all kinds of sort of, you know, it was a furore about it anyway. But here there's this man, and he stood up to recite his poetry. And the poems were full of darkness and deep, deep despair. One was called Nothing Land. And before you go any further, you know that it's not going to be there to put a smile on your face, so to speak. And in the course of this poem, he says, "We see nothing, we hear nothing, we feel nothing. while everything cries and everything dies. And in another called, another one called The Daylight of the Fading, it begins like this. It says, "This is my light, the daylit leftovers of pain, ingrained in emergent dark. Hands forging out a path. This is how my smile slashes my pain. This is how my heart passes the beating. This is how I shall walk. This is how I shall feel. Broken verses believing. This is my light, the darkest darkness." I think it's pretty safe to say I won't be buying any his books, but the point is, there they are. They express pain and anger and a deep sense of meaninglessness and hopelessness. And I suspect he speaks for a generation. And they represent for me a search for God. "For the one who promises, I have come to give you life in all its fullness. And also said, I am the light of the world, and those who follow me will not walk in darkness." And so everywhere I go, in different forms, in different ways, in different circumstances, people are asking the same question in 100,000 different ways. How do I find God? And it's a question that I believe needs to be answered by every church in the land. Every church has the same calling: to make God visible, available, and reachable to those who are asking these very important questions. Listen to what Jesus says to the disciples in the reading we had, to the disciples who are to be the inheritors of his own particular mission. He says, "You," pointed the disciples, "you are the light of the world. And a city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house." Or I like the Message version or translation of the same passage. He says this: "You are here to be light, bringing out the God colors in the world. God is not a secret to be kept. We are going public with this, as public as a city on a hill. If I make you light bearers, you don't think I'm going to hide you under a bucket. I'm putting you on a light stand. Now that I've put you there on a hilltop, on a light stand, then shine. Keep open house." And so Jesus' answer to a world and a society that's crying out with a question, "How can I find God?" His answer is straightforward. Don't keep God a secret. Go public. Shine. Keep open house. In other words, be the church that God has called you and created you to be. Serve the purpose for which you have been made. In the words of Archbishop William Temple, a church is the only organization that exists primarily for the benefit of its non-members. Let me give you that again. The church is the only organization that exists primarily, in the first place, in the first instance, for the benefit of non-members. Now just think about that statement for a minute, because I think it challenges the whole idea of why we think that we exist. Because I think many suppose that we exist for ourselves. I really believe that, and I think we show that in the way that we speak and in the way that we act. I want to read this short parable, and then I'll close with a brief word. And I may have read this to you before, but it's such a powerful parable, and it's so apt. On a dangerous sea coast where shipwrecks often occur, there was once a little lifeboat station. The building was primitive, and there was just one boat. But the members of the lifeboat stations were committed and kept a constant watch over the sea. When a ship went down, they unselfishly went out day or night to save the lost. Because so many lives were saved by that station, it became famous. Consequently, many people wanted to be associated with the station to give their time and their talent and money to support its important work. New boats were bought, new crews were recruited, a formal training session was offered, and as the membership in the life-saving station grew, some of the members became unhappy that the building was so primitive and that the equipment was so outdated. They wanted a better place to welcome the survivors pulled up from the sea. So they replaced the emergency cots with beds and put better furniture in the enlarged and newly decorated building. Now the life-saving station became a popular gathering place for its members. They met regularly, and when they did, it was apparent how they loved one another. They greeted each other, hugged each other, and shared with one another the events that had been going on in their lives. But fewer members were now interested in going to sea on life-saving missions. So they hired lifeboat crews to do this for them. About this time, a large ship was wrecked off the coast, and the hired crews brought into the life-saving station boatloads of cold, wet, dirty, sick, and half-drowned people. Some of them had black skin, and some had yellow skin. Some could speak English well, and some could hardly speak at all. Some were first-class cabin passengers of the ship, and some were the deckhands. The beautiful meeting place became a place of chaos. The plush carpets got dirty. Some of the exquisite furniture got scratched. And so the property committee immediately had a shower built outside the building where the victims of shipwreck could be cleaned up before coming inside. Well, at the next meeting, there was a rift in the membership. Most of the members wanted to stop the club-saving activities, for they were unpleasant and a hindrance to the normal fellowship of the members. Other members insisted that life-saving was their primary purpose and pointed out that they were still called a lifeboat station. But they were finally voted down and told that if they wanted to save the lives of all those various kinds of people who had been shipwrecked, well, they could begin their own lifeboat station down the coast. And you know what? That is what they did. As the years passed, the new station experienced the same changes that had occurred in the old. It evolved into a place to meet regularly for fellowship, for committee meetings, and for special training sessions about their mission. But few went out to the drowning people. The drowning people were no longer welcomed in that new lifeboat station. So another lifeboat station was founded further down the coast. And history continued to repeat itself. And if you visit that sea coast today, you'll find a number of adequate meeting places with ample parking and plush carpeting. Shipwrecks are frequent in those waters, but most of the people drown. Shipwrecks are frequent in those waters, but most of the people drown. When I read that parable, it hit me for six. Particularly in the light of the question I've just asked you, when people are asking the question, how do I find God? And there are so many people out there asking the same question. We could equate them, couldn't we, with people who are drowning. Jesus said, I have come to seek and to save the lost. And he passes on that mission to us, that we have the same sacred and vital calling to do all that we can to enable those who are searching to find God, to find him here, to find him through us, to find him through our searches, our churches. God, as the message says, is not a secret to be kept. And so the challenge for us as we face a new year is, what can we do to make to make this an organization that exists primarily for the benefit of its non-members and not for its members. Amen. Shall we pray?